Welcome back, everyone. This is Charles Dudley, and I'm here in the studio with my good friend Sean Decker. And we have been enjoying several hours of the Lost Art of Value teaching. And I've learned a lot. I hope you have. But believe it or not, we've probably only had about 3 or 4 more hours left at the most. We're kind of getting towards the end. But this is one of the most intriguing topics. And so I'm going to turn it right over to Sean. Today we'll be talking about influence. And this is, I guess, number 5 of the principles for the Lost Art of Value. So, Sean, take it away for us today and let us know what we'll be learning.
All right. Thank you so much again, Charles. To kind of maybe start the series on influence off, I really actually kind of started getting more understanding about this, really just from just being involved in real estate appraisals and also just being actively involved at my church. And so as I was doing real estate appraisals, funny little story, so I got into this when I was about 23 years old, so I got into it really young. And so a lot of the houses I would go to, a lot of the realtors, they've been doing it longer than I've been alive. And so I would show up to the house and they would make commentary to me about, well, you know, this and that about the house, and it's worth X amount because of the flooring and all these different things. And they would bring up all these different side factors in. And when they did that, when they would bring up all these different side factors that really didn't pertain to anything about value, but because I was 23 years old, they automatically assumed I was incompetent. And so this is sometimes a side factor of influence that people are not aware of, is just raw age. They say, well, you know, people discriminate. One of the big things is now if you have lots of master's and bachelor's degrees and those kind of things and you're 60 plus years old, then they'll say, well, they discriminate against you because you're old. Well, on the opposite side, when you're really young and you're a professional and you've got the degrees and certification, well, then they discriminate against you because you're young. And so really there's this sweet spot in your life where people, based off of your age, will assume that you know something. And so we're going to talk about a couple of different influences today. And there's probably about 6 or 7 total. And so there's economical, sociological, spiritual, and then some other ones we're going to talk about later in it. Is your positional influence or delegation, your professional influence or educational influence. And so with that being said, always remember that there is actual influence and then there's perceived influence. And so positional influence is perceived influence. It's not actual influence. And so, because the second you're removed from that position, you lose all your influence. And so, as a manager, lots of times you were placed in a position of influence, but you don't actually have any. And so, the key is once you become a manager, is to actually get influence while you're being a manager. And so, kind of one of the first things to kind of think about is actual influence is not when you're in a position, but when you're outside of the position, can you still ask someone to come, in a sense, can you still rally the troops when you're not in that position anymore? For example, if you're a manager and it's their day off and you need them to come in for 2 or 3 hours and they're not going to get paid, will they still show up? Because if they won't, you don't actually have any influence. You just have perceived influence. And so, and most people don't actually have influence. They just have the appearance of influence. This is where lots of times you'll hear about pop stars or celebrities or those kind of people. And really, they don't actually have real influence. Otherwise, their fans wouldn't turn on them so fast. Because the actual influence cannot be changed based off of you doing something small. And so if you do something small and they turn on you, that shows you didn't actually have much influence with them. And so you have to make sure when you're trying to determine where your influence level is with people, how fast do they turn on you? See, if they turn fast on you, that shows that you didn't actually have as much influence as you thought that you did. And so lots of times that influence is maybe positional. It's only because you're in a certain position, or maybe because you have a certain educational background or a certain professional background. But see, after they get to know you a little bit, if they lose that influence after they get to know you, then that lets you know your influence was really shallow. And so we're going to get into some of the different types of influences. And the first one I want to jump into is economical influence. And so economical influence is very widely used in the appraisal industry because it's a location, location, location. You know, it's all about what location your house is in. And that one is probably spoke about the most in real estate above anything else. But see, that also applies to you individually as a person. Because see, I can go from one location to another location and I have more influence based off of where I step. And so I can be in a set of a community and then I can walk into, say, a political party and I might not have any influence. Why? Because I'm not political. Versus if I walk into a church, I might have a different set of influence. Versus if I walk into a house doing an appraisal, I have a whole separate layer of influence. And so that's, again, it's locational. So depending on where I go, it's a physical location in a sense. Depending on where I go, that location has its own set of influences just based off of that location. And so some of the things in it are price, physical, you know, that's where your poverty versus your wealthy and those different types of things. Those are the economical side that actually drive the market by itself. And so that's where investors will come into an area and that's really underpoverished or, going bankrupt or those kind of things. And they'll buy up a bunch of companies. And they'll just buy them all up, and then they'll start two or three big factories there. But they'll buy $2 or 3 billion worth of real estate in the area. And then they go in and they set up 20 or 30 factories. Why? Because they can get it at a dirt cheap deal. Why? Because the economical influence is so low. Well, now that they've brought 20,000 jobs, well, now the whole market comes back up. Now they make all this money on the real estate that they own because they bought it all at 50 cents on the dollar. And so then they control the entire market by pushing the market up because they changed the economical influence of the entire market. And so when you understand this, this is, you know, some of the principles I was saying that we can change value and this influence by understanding the previous principles allows you to use the influential side in order to actually change it. And so if you don't have the five types of value and the highest and best use principles and analysis right, and you don't have a lot of the weighted analysis and those type of things down, then your ability to change the economical, sociological, or spiritual influences become much more difficult. And so this is where you knowing those principles, the highest and best use, see, they know that if they come in and start a bunch of factories and bring a bunch of workers, that people will come for a higher paying job. And so they come for this higher paying job and they'll even move all the way across country. And the cost of living's less because it's a down market at the time. And so this is where they start making money and making money. And then the people that are making money causes the market to come back up. And so the property that they bought for, say, 50 cents on the dollar, they're selling off gradually for 60 cents and 70 cents and 80 cents to 100 cents on the dollar. And so they're getting their return on investment because they own all the companies. And so this is just one way that you can use in order to change value for you. The next one we want to talk about is sociological. This is more about the people or society, culture, religious doctrine, or educational understanding. And so, depending on your location, there is usually some sociological influences of that overall area versus if there's a particular religious belief, it can control some things. If there is some a specific type of people or society or a specific doctrine or certain types of educational requirements, those kind of things, all of which have a certain type of understanding or influence on the overall area. And the sociological influences can have an effect such as, you know, when you go work at a company, if you don't have a minimum of a bachelor's degree, see, that's a sociological influence. They have an assumption that the bachelor's or master's or doctorate's degree or associate's degree actually has some type of influence or actual principle based on what type of work you're going to complete. And so when you understand that, lots of times you may in order have to get a degree in order to change that influence in that particular area. And so the next one we want to get into is your spiritual influences, which is beliefs, morals, superstitions. And one of the stories I never forgot was from a seminar where Robert Kiyosaki was trying to start some IPOs. And when he was doing this, first thing he did is he went and found a gentleman that had started over 100 IPOs. And when he done that, he went to him and said, "Hey, I'd really like to do this." And the gentleman says, "Well, you know, I don't really want to teach you." He says, "You can teach me out of my pocket. Anything that you make is your money. And I just want you to teach me." He says, "Okay, this is what I want you to do." He said, "I want you to fly down to South America, and there is a particular gold mine or a mine that I'm interested in purchasing. And the price tag is $100 million. And I want you to fly down there and give me your assessment of should I buy this particular mine." And so Robert Kiyosaki flies down there. He looks and reviews and goes through the mines and talks to the locals and all those kind of things. And he comes back and he says, and he goes to the gentleman and the gentleman says, "Well, what is your recommendation?" He says, "Honestly, I think the investment itself would be an excellent investment. However, due to the religious and sociological beliefs, I would not recommend actually purchasing it." And so again, this is where your weighted analysis comes in between economical, sociological, and spiritual influences. And so based on the sociological and spiritual influence, he said that the people are very superstitious, and because they're very superstitious, that they would feel that the graves would be robbed, and that instead of just misplacing them, they would end up fighting us, and so we would end up with destruction in equipment, destruction of probably possible mines, fights, even possibly civil unrest. He said, "So based on this, I would not necessarily recommend purchasing the company. However, economically speaking, it would probably be quite profitable." And so the gentleman says, "Well, thank you very much." And so he ended up teaching Robert Kiyosaki how to do IPOs, and he gained a mentor based off the understanding of spiritual and sociological influences. And so, again, if two of the three are not necessarily lining up and you're trying to change the influence, it limits your ability to change the influence without understanding what needs to be weighted inside of influence itself. So you always have to remember that each one of these have a particular number, knowledge, or mindset that are attached to them, so a certain perspective. And you can assign a particular number or even a value to these. Again, this is where you can, again, do your weighted analysis. And this is where you can start finding the accuracy of what you believe is an economical, sociological, or spiritual belief. And once you start actually running the numbers and start looking at them individually, you'll tend to find out which ones actually have the greatest impact. Now, probably the number one thing of anything that will allow you to lose influence as a individual is probably the one simple question of, actually, I'm going to jump to something else first. So we're going to get into positional influence. Okay. Positional influence is where you are put in a particular position, maybe as management, et cetera. So then you have the ability to delegate to other people. This is one of the things that you need in order to multiply your time, is the ability to delegate. And so when you have the ability to delegate, this is almost always a positional influence that someone has given to you. Now, when you are the boss, you're recognized as the boss, so therefore it's still a positional influence. When you are no longer the boss of the person and you still have influence, then now you have actual influence. And so this is where, for example, someone quits your company or doesn't work for your company anymore, and you can call them up and, hey, say, would you please come over and hang out or do whatever the case is, and or I need some help on something, and they still come. So this kind of, again, shows that separation. And so what tends to happen is lots of times you are no longer the boss and you don't hear from them anymore. You don't get to have any interaction with them. You try to contact them. They don't receive any of your phone calls. They don't return any of your phone calls. They don't want any of your phone calls. And then you want to talk about how much influence you have. You don't actually have any influence. You have a positional influence. And so when you understand that, you'll reevaluate what influence you actually have with people. And so, again, and that was to kind of reiterate a point. It says, in a volunteer army, it is hard to delegate when you have not proven you are an all-hands-on-deck kind of person while maintaining that you are a doer and not just a talker. And so if you have not proven to those that are around you in a volunteer army that you are willing to get down and dirty with them on a consistent basis, you will lose your influence with them on an individual basis because they do not feel that you are with them. And so this is very important when working with other volunteers. The other thought of this is that proper delegation only works if both feel they are being added to. Again, what is your number versus what is your perceived number and what is your actual influence? So again, never make an assumption that you have influence with people. The second you make assumptions that you have influence with people, you are overstep your boundaries with your father, brother, son mentality, or confidant, constituent, comrade. And so when you do this, be very cautious about just assuming you have that type of influence. See, this is actually where, two brothers, by me assuming I have all this influence with you, I'm not going to ask the right questions. I'm not going to clarify. See, again, to go back to the last subject, is are you going to clarify? Are you going to ask the right questions, and are you going to communicate? And so, but the second you assume you have influence, you stop asking questions because you think you have the right to say all this. And so this again is that positional influence. And so, and vice versa. So they might feel that they're a colleague and really your position of influence is actually very limited with them because they feel that they're just a coworker. And so this is sometimes the breakdown in even a managerial position. And this is sometimes where a managerial position can self-sabotage themselves by trying to be the friend instead of being the boss, or the parent trying to be a friend instead of the parent. And so there has to be an understanding at all times that there is a positional influence. And so, like when I, with my kids, I'm always being very cautious to let them know that I am their dad first, and then I can be their friend. And so that I don't cross a line of positional influence and then actually give it up.
It's interesting you talk about that too, Sean, because these relationships can change. And as you've kind of brought out, there's some differences in volunteer situations, church or otherwise. I mean, there's all kinds of volunteer organizations as opposed to a work relationship. And I've seen myself in many areas that you're talking about, whether I've been the boss, whether I've been the employee. One of the things I think that a lot of people may have a challenge dealing with, and I think it would be good for you to discuss it in the concept of value and influence, because you're going to have people, I've had this situation, I know you have too, where you're equals. And then because you're doing a good job, you're going to get promoted. So you may literally be in a situation where today you're someone's equal and tomorrow you're responsible to be their boss, and the situation changes. And even vice versa. You know, you may be where your equals and one of your co-partners in work becomes your boss. But either way, I would just kind of like to ask you, you know, how you think people should properly handle that and, you know, maintain the right amount of influence. Things always happen. Things are changing. But, you know, while keeping the relationship, you know, without, I guess, burning the bridge, so to speak. And can you do that? I mean, I've had this conversation with my wife and other people many times. Like when we were at our previous employment, people that we were friends with, we got jobs where we were at the new place. We were their friends outside of work, but now we're in a managerial position over them at the new place. So there's a fine line there, and sometimes people are going to have to know how to properly handle that and have the right integrity with their influence.
That being said, one of the things in that you kind of addressed is some people will understand and some people won't. Now, one of the first comments I kind of said was that, do you have actual influence or perceived influence? See, because when you have actual influence, when you're promoted, then they're thrilled that you're promoted because you had real influence with them. And they know your character and those kind of things. And they know because of your character that they're not going to be sabotaged or that you're going to do them wrong or treat them unfairly or think less of them. And so there's some real influence there.
Yeah, they're not playing the jealousy card. They're genuinely accepting and proud of you for that.
Right, because you have real influence versus just perceived influence.
And then along with that, what you're saying, I don't mean to jump in there, but this is the conversation I'm always dealing with a lot of times, is there's a mutual respect.
Right.
Even if you are the band, if you're the one that's promoted, you still respect the people that help you get there or that were with you at that phase.
Well, and it's also vice versa. Now, one of the difference between actual influence and perceived influence is once you get put in a position but you didn't have actually any real influence, people are then mad at you for your position because they don't respect your position because you never had any actual influence with them. And so this, again, is one of the big mistakes is if you're promoted into a different position, for example, we'll use you. You were recently promoted into a different position. But again, I didn't ever treat you any different. And because of your position, I automatically acknowledge that you have different responsibilities and those kind of things in which you have to do in order to maintain your position. And so I respect that just out of raw understanding of you, your personality type, both good and bad, some of your own personal hangups, which you will also admit. And so, but see, again, me, you have real influence with me. And so, and you've had it for years. And so again, this is where the position itself does not cause a problem. But when there's no actual influence with the person, they get promoted into the thing, and then they just make the comment like, well, oh, don't they think they're somebody now? Well, dude, they've been there for 3 days. Now, people can get some attitudes and those kind of things when they get put into a new position. And again, that kind of brings up again what's their economical, sociological, and spiritual beliefs. And some people, when they get put in a position, have a belief system that they need to treat people a certain way. And so, with this being understood, sometimes you can negate some of those beliefs and maintain your influence side by maybe just sitting down and telling them, hey, I've got some new requirements and those things that I have to do. I'm not trying to step on your toes. I'm not trying to cause any problems, but I've got deadlines, or I've got somebody breathing down my neck, or I've got this and that. And so, again, it's maintaining that influential side, which is done through probably the number one thing, and we're really going to touch on this in a few minutes, but it's trust. And so where there's no trust, real influence is very limited.
The other thing that's interesting, you talked about, you know, we can't control how other people feel or respond. And even if people have feelings, whether they are quote unquote correct or not, I never like to invalidate people's feelings, you know, because they're human and they have emotions. They may not always be logical. But the point of that is some people react, like you were saying there, where instead of being that edifying or uplifting individual, if they are trying to tear down, a lot of times it's self-image. So how they value themselves.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so as a defensive mechanism, you know, it's kind of like that analogy we used to give when we did seminars sometimes with the crabs in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And one crab's trying to get out, and so all the other crabs are going to try to keep pulling that one crab down. So nobody gets out, you know? So I think from a self-introspective perspective, and I've had to go through this in my life at different times, is value yourself. Your value in yourself isn't based on where you are positionally in an organization or anywhere. It's do you value who you are where you're at? Just like when you had hit rock bottom, and Kimberly and I were just having this conversation yesterday. It's so funny. It's like beautiful things grow out of the rock bottom,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so sometimes your most valuable position is when you've lost everything, but you've come to the realization, I don't know anything.
Right. And one of the, I saw a picture one time, and it was this tree, and it had started to grow in the middle of a boulder. Yeah. And over, I think it was like 25 years, from the constant pressure of the boulder or on the boulder, it splits the boulder in half. A tree. Because its taproot started in a hole in the tree. And it does it so gradually, it can take the hardest substance and shatter it. And so likewise, sometimes when we are formed as people in a rock bottom place, our root is in solid rock. And so we have the ability to flourish in the hardest environments because we grew up in rock. And so, but to kind of touch on one of the previous subjects that we were just talking about is maintaining influence with people. When you're maintaining influence with individuals, is there has to be trust. That is always the absolute key. And people have trust for different reasons. The next one we were going to get into is professional influence. And so professional influence is based off of, for example, I'm a real estate appraiser. So when I walk into a house, people have a certain amount of respect for me just because of my profession, because they know I'm licensed. They know that I have certain standards, certifications, or something that I'm held to. And so they have a certain respect just based off of my work history or my experiential influence. And so how much experience do I have? And so you tell them, well, I've been doing it 14 years. They go, oh, okay. Why? Because this is professional influence. Then there is educational influence. This is based off of degrees or specific type of educational certifications, such as a master's in coaching or whatever the case is. It's a specific educational degree. For example, what's the purpose of all the funny acronyms behind people's name? To let you know what kind of PhD or doctorates or counseling degree or LPN or RN or nurse or et cetera. What's the purpose? It lets you know some educational influence that you have right off the bat. If a RN comes up to me or a guy comes up to me and there's somebody on the floor that has passed out in the hospital and the guy runs up and says, hey, I'm a doctor. What am I making the assumption of? Both professional and educational influence. That's an automatic assumption. See, there's no position. I don't know the guy. He's not over me. He's not my boss. But instantly he has influence based off of what? A two-letter word. DR in front of his name. So all of a sudden he has all this influence based off of two letters. And a period. That's it. That's really where his influence is. Because there are some doctors that are horrible doctors. Not usually the case. Most of them don't usually last too long in their profession, like most professionals. But the assumption automatically is somebody come up and say, hey, I'm a Class A contractor. What's that? That is a type of educational and professional influence right off the get-go. But then after you interview him, you find out, yeah, he's had 90 jobs. He's ripped off 30 people. He's probably the worst contractor in 15 districts. Why? Because you didn't ask any questions. You didn't get any clarification and you didn't communicate anything. And so this is where you can make mistakes based off of perceived influence. So there's actual influence versus perceived influence. Now see, when a contractor's actually done work for me, he now has actual influence. But there's some contractors I've hired and they didn't finish their job or they done the job halfway or they quote you one thing and then give you something else on the back end and they have absolutely no influence with me ever and possibly ever again because they weren't professional to me. And so, and their education means nothing if they do that kind of work. And so they lose all influence because they've done a bad job. And so one of the things is what's your return on investment? So what is the proof of how you do your job? So if you don't do a good job, it shows up on your professional influence. If somebody realizes that you have some educational influence, and say, for example, you're a doctor or a lawyer or whatever the case is, and you've got a law degree, and then after me speaking to you about 5 minutes, I find out that really you're incompetent, and you don't actually know anything more than I do, but you have a degree, and just because you go to school doesn't mean you actually learn something. And so, again, they can lose that educational influence. And so, again, that's where, for example, when I talk to lawyers lots of times, one of the first things I say, what kind of lawyer are you? You know, because see, that one of the things that people had perceived is that if you're a lawyer, you know all of law. But that's actually inaccurate, just like when people see us appraisers, oh, so you do commercial properties. No, I do not. I don't want to do commercial properties. And so it's a personal choice, not that I don't have the ability, not that I don't have understanding and et cetera, but I don't want to. I don't have the certification and I don't want to get the certification because I don't like all the narrative writing. I don't enjoy it. It's not fun for me. And I like to do things that I enjoy doing. And so, but again, see, that's where you get into your professional and educational influence. And so when you understand some of these different sides and different principles and how these things are kind of intertwined with each other, you can start determining what kind of influence you have. Is it based off of position or is it just based off of a location? So if you move from one location to another, if you have the same influence in both places, then most likely it's your influence. But if you go from one place to a different place and the influence is substantially different, well, it may be based off of the location. And so, and then when you show up that somebody loves you, but it's not because they know you, it's because somebody else said something good about you, well, that's positional influence. And so for you to make the assumption that anybody is actually respecting you is necessarily inaccurate. And so this is where, by understanding the back and forth of influences, you won't actually make the mistakes to push yourself or damage your influence by assuming you have any.
One of the things that we teach in our church, I guess, and we've taught this in some of our business seminars too, but it's a lot of the John Maxwell stuff that's been out forever, that leadership is influence. That's his simple definition. And so a leader is very simply, according to John Maxwell, someone who is able to get followers. And so there's the stuff that you're talking about at the basic level. He talks about it being the positional level, where people follow you based on your title or your basically a delegated influence from somebody else or from the job itself, from the organization. And most people, I think along the lines of what you're talking about, so I'm not trying to teach John Maxwell stuff on this, but you can go look that up. But it's position, then permission. People give you permission to be a leader. And then production, where you're getting results as a leader. People development, where you're reproducing yourself. And then ultimately, he calls it personhood or pinnacle, which is ultimately your name has weight to the level that people will just follow you because of who you are. They don't have to know you. So one of the things I would bring up in this conversation is a caution to people, two things. One, John Maxwell does teach, you can never skip a step. And if you move from one organization to another one, you basically start back over. You may go through them faster, but you can't skip. The other thing, though, is for whoever the leader may be, whether it's yourself or others, to not think more highly of yourself than you are. Example, the personhood, where your name is just, boom, I am fill in the blank, and I have an immediate following because of my reputation. It's, you know, that's the kind of thing it takes a lifetime to build. So a lot of times I've experienced this a lot when you first met me, and we were kind of hobnobbing with a lot of other, I call them micro celebrities. Well, they have a big ego, and nobody knows who they are outside of a few thousand of people in their little circle. And that's not a bad thing, but that's not personhood. That's not pinnacle. That's not a lifetime achievement. And so I think that would be the area that I would caution people is, and we've seen it even in our own little group here that we study at our church, is sometimes people haven't learned how to see themselves as others see them. Because that's what leadership is based on, is it's really, are you getting other people to follow you?
Absolutely. And really, out of those five things, one of the thing that really just kind of got me and really is going to kind of bring us into our next subject is, do you have any integrity? Because see, for me, in order to go to each individual level, you have to have integrity. And the integrity is actually what changes your influence. And so when you say something, does that happen? Because see, that's kind of the different parts of the influence is you go from just a delegated influence to the next one and then to a production one. Well, in order to get somebody to produce something, they have to believe that what they're doing is going to produce. And then for them to put their whole life on it and it be the pinnacle, they have to really believe in what you're saying.
People may be very good at a specific level. And I saw this so many times, Sean, in like McDonald's and some retail management and other places I've worked. You could get somebody who, I mean, a simple example is like somebody who's very competent, a very competent technical person. You know, great at their skill, great at their craft, at their job, with customers, everything. And that's the person, you know, you think ideally I want to promote them to the manager level. And then they fall apart. Or somebody who's really good when they're basically what we would consider, and this is in many different organizations, an hourly type of a management person where they're paid for their hours and, you know, the whole nine yards. And then all of a sudden they get promoted to a salary. And everybody knows, you know, that first transition, sometimes you lose a little money on the first step, but you pick up more on the next round or through bonuses or things like that. And they lose it. You know, they lose that ability to keep growing or to keep bigger groups of people or delegating through other junior level managers or leaders. And so what people need to realize, you're talking about integrity, is you can never just arrive. If you've arrived and you're not teachable and you're not coachable or you're not always striving to make to the next level, which means one of my best mentors told me, as long as you have something of value to give to other people, then people will follow you, people will listen. So to me, that means I've got to keep learning. I've got to keep improving. Even if I get promoted, it's kind of like, I'm at one level, I become the best, I get promoted to the next level, and I'm the worst now until I can improve at that level.
Well, and one of the keys to me about integrity is character. And character is said that it is only character when no one's around and you still do the same thing. And so lots of people do not really have the integrity or character to do the thing when nobody's around. And see, what they were doing at one level, they get to a new level. For example, they go from hourly, and they know if they don't work that hour, they don't get paid. But then they get promoted to salary, and you lose some people. Why? Is because now it's not based off of the hour anymore. It's based off of the fact of that I just get paid a set amount. And so now I lose the integrity to work during the hour. And so, like I should. And so this is where, again, that integrity is such an issue. And so one of the things I like to ask people, and they say, well, you know, it just seems like I'm losing influence, or it seems like I don't have respect from people, or this and that. And so really, I've always got really one question to ask them. And it's a blatant question, and it's pretty bold. Are you a liar? They'll go, absolutely not. No way. So this is really some little things that people put in their mind about if you're trustworthy or not. What's your integrity level? And so here's some things. I'll be there at such time. Are you? See, these are ways to diminish your integrity or your influence. Here's another one. I don't have money for. But then I go see you at the movies. Or I see you somewhere else. So now I know it's not because you don't have the money. You just didn't have it for me. And so I classify you as a liar. Here's another one. I don't have time for to do that with you. Well, that's funny. You have time for 12 other people. So that lets me know I'm not a priority. I didn't know how to, but I watch you know, don't know how to do other things, but you find all these other ways to do it. See, this is where lots of times bosses will lose, or the employee will lose influence with the boss, is because he'll know that they can learn how to do a particular thing, but they're being too lazy to go do it. And so therefore he no longer trusts them. And so they lose all influence for extra days off and extra pay raises and all for what? Evaluation. Based off of what? A lack of trust. So here's another fun one. That's just not my personality. Really. I can't help it. I heard a story one time and I always thought it was real funny. You know, men that can be abusive to their wives and those kind of things. It's funny that they never just lose complete control when there's a 350-pound linebacker, a foot from them. But they can hit on their little 120-pound wife. It's amazing how much control they have all of a sudden. Joyce Myers makes a comment, and she said that one day she was having just an absolute hissy fit at the house. Crying, upset, mad. And I think her pastor come and knocked on the door. And all of a sudden, hello, how are you? I wasn't expecting you. And all of a sudden, you can help it. Or, you know, that's just not my personality type. I'm not really good at that. Okay, so when's that stopped you before? So you lose influence. These are ways to lose influence.
One thing about that, too, is you've got to be willing. I know I just want to say this for the listeners for a moment, because this is where sometimes the training can chap your hide if you know you're not in the right place. And it's not because people are trying to be rude. It's because we care. The real crux of this is you got to be willing to take personal responsibility for yourself, for your development. Know that there's not a single perfect human being out there. We have grace a lot of times with other people, and we don't have grace with ourselves. And then I see sometimes the other side of that can be true. Sometimes we're willing to give ourselves a lot of slack, but we don't give slack to others. My point is, what Sean's talking about, this is just where you've got to do a personal look in the mirror. We used to say this in some of our training. Would you hire yourself? When you look in the mirror, when you look at your calendar, as Sean talked about in one of the other sessions, your calendar and your checkbook, would you want to multiply yourself and have 10 of you helping you? Are you doing the things that somebody else would say, this person is a valuable member of my team? So don't get upset if you ain't where you want to be. But this is where you got to start saying, okay, I need to make some changes. I need to take responsibility.
And that part of it is kind of interesting lots of times with me about the real side of just making sure, are you being perceived as a liar? Because it's so easy to be. And see, this is where I would say 80% of people lose influence. Is I'll listen to someone say, oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't be there. That's a lie. I'm sorry, I didn't have time for that. Also a lie. And it's not intentional, and lots of times people mean the best and those kind of things, but you have to watch out for making statements that are not true. And anything that is a statement, especially like hard I's or hard U's is what they're referenced in a counseling setting. But when you use hard I's and hard U's, I didn't have time for that. See, the second you say that, I'm evaluating if you had time. So I'm evaluating what your priority is. I don't have money for that. Well, that's funny. You went and ate at another restaurant. Couldn't help nobody out. Right. Got it. And so these are ways that you can lose influence. I don't have time for. No. Instead, use phrases such as, my priority is, based on my current knowledge. Something I actually tell my kids. My kids are not allowed to tell me, I don't know how. They can only tell me phrases like, I don't want to learn. Or, I don't really feel like it. Well, that's true. They don't feel like it. They're not saying they're not able. They're not saying that they can't. You know, for example, one of my sons, my stepson actually, when I first got with my wife, he had a hot temper. I mean a hot temper. And he would throw a fit. And I would tell him because he would, you know, raise his fist and all these different things. And he'd get screaming and all these just temper tantrums and stuff like that. And I just started telling him, I said, you have about 5 seconds to straighten that attitude up. And what he learned, he had the ability to control the countenance on his face. And so it's not that he still doesn't get mad, but he'll go, I'm aggravated. I am going to chill out a minute. That's fine. You have that right. But you're not going to have a hissy fit at me. You're not going to come in, you know, and try to get violent or whatever the case. And I mean, he was 6 years old. And so again, not that people, you know, again, I had to deal with a particular problem, but nonetheless, it's not that you can't, you don't want to. And whenever by maintaining influence, you start making I statements, people are going to watch your behavior. And so you have to be very watchful that you follow up with whatever you say. What is your integrity? Once again. And if you tell me something's going to happen and I never see it happen, then I'll stop doing stuff for you. Because there's no point. I feel that it's wasting my time. And so, again, this is just simple ways we lose influence with people on a day-to-day basis. And so we're going to get into basically one more thing, but we're going to do that in our next chapter. So, or on our last CD, and this CD isn't going to necessarily be a full hour. But again, thank you guys. You have a wonderful and blessed day. We appreciate you. Make sure that you visit us again on the Art of Value or Value to Victory. And we'll be glad to speak to you. And remember, we'll be doing coaching. So please remember to come sign up and just hopefully let us know again what we can do for you guys, how this is impacting you, how this is changing your life. Visit us on Facebook, and again, we'll just have a wonderful time and look forward to speaking to you soon.